Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patty LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hello, I'm Jesse McAnally.
And I am Andrew DeWolf.
And welcome to Musicals with Cheese, a podcast where I try to get Andrew to like musical theater week by week and show by show. How are you doing today, Andrew?
Justice, there's something behind you. I think it might be like a clue.
Is that a clue?
It's like right there. Like, just turn around and like, just literally, no, like literally, what? You don't see it? Are you blind? Is there something wrong? You can't see the clue?
I can't. Can you? What is it?
I keep telling you that there is a clue. It's right behind you.
I don't believe you. You have to tell me what it is.
Well, it's a clue as to what our episode's going to be.
Oh my God. Oh! It's a picture of New York. Look at that. Wow. So I got to draw this in my handy dandy notebook. And we're going to just draw a big apple here. Andrew. Oh my gosh. Behind you, I see a clue.
Where?
A clue.
Hang on, I'm only looking to the sides of me, so I don't really know where
behind
it would be.
Behind you!
Behind me?
Yeah!
What's behind me?
A green screen, probably, but what do you see?
Wait a second, is that another clue?
Oh, what is it?
It's a musical.
I gotta draw that in my handy-dandy notebook here. The concept of musicals just got.
The concept of musicals is a clue.
Wow, New York musical. We're doing the Blues Clues movie, guys. I think it's Blues Big City Adventure is what it's called.
Blues Big City Adventure? Wow.
Ooh, cue the music, Andrew. Big City Adventure was written by Angela Santomero and Liz Massey, with music and lyrics by Alex Geringas and Anthony Green, based on Blues Clues and Blues Clues and You. It premiered on Paramount Plus on November 18th, 2022. The plot of the film is, when Josh gets the opportunity of a lifetime to audition for Rainbow Puppies Broadway musical, Josh and Blue skidoo to NYC for the very first time, where they meet new friends and discover the magic of music, dance, and following one's dream. So, Andrew.
Yeah.
This is a patron request from our wonderful Discord manager, Hexdon, who requested this. And what can we say, Andrew?
What can't we say? I mean, it's Blue's Clues. I'm transported back to the early 2000s when I was watching Steve and screaming at my television screen.
Steve, you idiot! It's behind you!
The clue's right there, Steve! Turn around!
Steve, why are you going to college? You're just leaving me here with your stupid brother? Ugh.
It's interesting because this is a musical for small children, clearly.
Yes.
But it's also for, like, weird 27-year-olds who have nostalgia for Blue's Clues because they bring back like Steve and was Joe? Is it Joe?
Yeah.
In addition to the new guy,
Josh.
Jeff? Josh?
My name's Jeff.
Josh. So everybody's there. I mean, they got the whole gang. So I don't understand. I don't really understand.
Where are you confused? But I feel like this is a pretty straightforward thing.
I guess the idea is that it's for new parents that used to watch Blue's Clues and now their kids are watching it. So it's like nostalgia for them.
I guess. It's weird that people in our generation are parents, but I guess that's accurate. When you don't have a podcast, you start raising families.
Yeah, like when you have friends and you go outside to talk to people.
You're funny. You're real funny there.
I know, right?
You stay inside and watch musicals all day.
Against your will.
Yeah. What is your history with Blues Clues? Were you a Blues Clues kids growing up?
I was. Like, absolutely.
All right.
I watched a lot of Blues Clues and Thomas the Tank Engine, but a lot of Blues Clues.
I think we brought up Thomas the Tank Engine before.
Starlight Express.
Yeah, you were a big fan of that. But Blue's Clues, like, how obsessed? Were you, like, one of the people that were like, I gotta see Blue's Clues live, and I have to get the handy-dandy notebook and the replica chair and all those things, where you just, like,
I feel like I had a handy-dandy notebook. I can't fully remember, though. That might have been in my imagination, because I watched Blue's Clues so much. that I thought I had a handy dandy notebook, but I didn't. I definitely didn't go to see Blue's Clues live, I don't think. Okay. I don't think I did any of that kind of stuff. I just watched the show a lot, and I didn't really get past the Steve era, I don't think.
So you weren't there for, like, the Joe Maggette?
I think I was around, but I don't think I ever, like, watched any of the Joe episodes, because they did a lot of reruns of the Steve episodes.
They did, but I remember. So I was a Blue's kid, too, and they announced that Steve was going off to college, and we were going to meet his brother Joe on the show in a 3-episode event that they aired at primetime, because usually on Nick Jr., it's, like, in the morning, but this was, like, 8 p.m. You had to stay up later than usual to watch it.
It was an event.
It kind of was. You had 3 half-hour specials. One was Steve introducing Joe and Joe doing the adventure with Steve. Another one where Joe was alone, but Steve was still there and helping out and existing, but Joe kind of ran the show. And then a third one, which was Steve's goodbye episode. And I think the clues were like, get for Steve before you leave. And then Steve just left and we were stuck with Joe. And as a kid, I didn't mind Joe, but I was like, this isn't what I grew up with. As an adult, I think, especially in this movie, I think Joe really stands out.
I think Steve, like the actor that plays Steve, wanted to separate a little bit. Steve, I think it's Steve Burns, right? I don't know if he really wanted to come back to Blue's Clues ever. He probably got convinced by paychecks and people
and
saying
guilt.
Like, oh, it's for the nostalgia. Maybe a little bit of guilt because, you know, he essentially killed off a lot of kids' childhoods.
Did you see his apology video?
No.
Okay.
He apologized?
Yeah, he apologized like, hey, kids, I realized it was probably kind of traumatizing that I kind of left and never came back.
I was like, oh, hey, guess what? Big news. I'm leaving. This is my brother Joe. He's your new best friend. And then I got on a bus and I left. And we didn't see each other for like a really long time. Can we just talk about that?
Well, this isn't even the first time Joe and Steve and Josh have shared the screen together. Like, I did a little research, and it seems
they were on the new show. They show up on the new show.
But, you know, that episode was directed by Steve Burns himself to get a director's credit. And I feel like there was a little bit of like, hey, if you come back, we'll let you direct a few episodes, add to that DGA card, get you some benefits, maybe get you some more job, and, you know, things like that, which... For someone that I don't want to call Steve Burns washed up, but not as active as they used to be, so much that people thought he died multiple times.
Can you really be washed up from being a Blue's Clues host? I mean, let's be real.
That follows you to death. You're going to be buried with that handy dandy notebook, motherfucker.
He's really probably not going to be able to like escape from that past, like even if he wants to. But I think it's fun seeing him in something again. And I really like that they made him into like a detective. Because it's funny. It's like, well, yeah, I guess the show is all about solving mysteries, so it makes sense that someone who was good at it would become a detective.
I think it's really funny. I think his costume's great. I think now that we've talked about our history with Blue's Clues, our history of the host a little bit, do you remember, before we move on, really, do you remember the evolution of Blue's Clues, like, when we got a little too old to watch it, especially you and me, where they stopped because I think the Joe years just kind of waned in interest, and then they made Blue a puppet show? Like, they literally made...
Yeah.
You remember this, right? I'm not crazy.
There was a puppet thing, and there was a puppet thing, there was an animated thing, and then I think they did, like, a combination show at one point where it was, like, both.
Well, it's kind of what we got now is the combination, like, 2.5D, 3.5D, maybe, look that they have now. And I don't love it. I miss the, like, kind of shitty-looking cardboard cutout nature of the original.
Yeah, and Blue doesn't look great. But I've also noticed in this, Blue is, like, not in it that much.
No.
It's like, Blue's just kind of a prop, like... That's kind of there.
Yeah. Blue used to be like the one who had the want, and we're trying to figure out what Blue wants through her clue. And here it's just like, oh, there's clues and there's a mystery. But this is Josh's story about becoming a Broadway star because he's a good singer. What is the plot of this movie, Andrew?
I mean, I feel like you just gave the whole thing away right there. There's really not much else to it. It's Josh wants to be a Broadway star. They jump into a billboard with their bus and end up in New York City. And then they get lost on the way to the theater and have to try to become a Broadway star. They have to find their way there to become a Broadway star.
Well, he left his handy dandy notebook at home and...
Oh, that's right. He forgot. How do you forget the notebook, Josh? Amateur hour over here.
Yeah,
Steve
Andrew
would have never forgotten that.
You still have your handy dandy notebook. Like, we all know that you do. And we didn't lose it or anything. But yeah, Steve never forgot his. Joe never forgot his.
Amateur hour from Josh. My goodness. I get that he was nervous, though. Maybe the one time we can forgive.
Maybe. That being said, how does Joe and Steve get involved?
I'm trying to remember why.
Because Mr. Salt comes to New York.
Mr. Salt shows up at Steve's door and is like, we need help. That's right.
Mr. Salt gets an awful lot of play in this movie. More than Blue, even.
I like Mr. Salt, though. I'm fine with it.
Yeah, the original voice actor returned for the first time in a long time for this movie. So I think that's part. And I think he was part of the original creative team, too. So it's kind of like a swan song for a lot of the original people.
Yeah, this definitely feels like probably the last time we're going to see Steve and maybe Joe.
I don't know. I think this might start the Jonesance because he really stood out to me in this movie. Maybe it's just like how he's like very cute now in a like adult kind of you could probably lead a movie way.
So yeah, Steve looks like an old man.
Yeah,
sort of.
Josh
and Joe
feels like a kid, and Joe just looks like, oh, you could probably lead a TV show if you wanted to.
It's very funny that they just have him working at a present store, which like what?
And he has presents on his sweater.
What does he sell? Presents?
General presents. You have to open it to find out. You know what? That could actually exist. Now that I'm actually unpacking that, just selling wrapped gifts to people, like, that could be fun.
Yeah, but to make, like, real money, you'd have to call it loot boxes and sell it with cryptocurrency or something.
It's basically, he's selling loot boxes.
Dang. He's a scammer. Fucking Alex Winter shows up. For some reason.
Yeah.
I feel like they were referencing Bill and Ted. I don't know why they were referencing Bill and Ted.
Have you looked at Alex Winter's other work outside of Bill and Ted?
I haven't. What is he in?
Have you ever seen Freak?
No.
Google just anything from the movie Freak. He has this weird, dark sense of humor that's like big on puppetry and big on like weird, horrendous imagery.
Freaked, but ugly, but funny.
And that was like his big step into the filmmaking world was that. And he's known for like animation in his early days and things like that. So it didn't seem that surprising. I'm just betting like, oh, he's probably friends of some of the creative team because he has this filmmaking bug in him.
Okay.
That it felt weirdly natural to me.
They did a fun like Wild Stallion style Blues Clues song.
Yep.
And he said the words adventure and journey like a lot.
Oh my god, he said adventure and journey a lot.
Yeah, I'm wondering if they're trying to hint at something, like they were referencing something.
Blue and Ted's excellent adventure.
I mean, it's a funny cameo though.
Yeah, I don't
mind. I think there's a lot of stuff that they put in this for adults, probably to get them to turn on a hour and 20 minute episode of Blue's Clues for their kids, which I think most adults probably wouldn't want to sit through an hour and 20 minutes of Blue's Clues.
Although us 25, 26, how old are we? 27?
I'm like 80, 85.
Us old men watching this, it wasn't that bad. Like, we don't grade entirely on curves, but I feel like it would just be unfair if we're just like, man, the plot makes no sense. So many plot holes.
Honestly, there's really not many plot holes. Like,
Josh couldn't see Steve and Joe? They were right there.
I guess that's the biggest plot hole, if we're going to call it one. But the balloon's deflated, so, I mean, how would he see them? I mean, come on. they sing a fun song at the end.
Yeah.
Can we talk about Rainbow Puppy? What the fuck is going on
there? What do you got against Rainbow Puppy? I'm mad Magenta doesn't have a cameo.
Yeah, what the fuck? No, but
Periwinkle,
like,
all the favorite characters aren't here.
Look, I don't have anything against Rainbow Puppy necessarily. It's just,
she didn't deserve that Emmy.
The main character is Blue. You have another dog that's Magenta. And then you go for a third dog. And instead of picking a color, you're just like all the colors. Like, I don't know. And they look a little silly.
I don't mind it. But why can that dog talk when Magenta and Blue can't? That was my bothering.
That's true. One thing that kind of is like weird, Blue's Clues takes place apparently in Storybook Land. I guess that's where they actually live. They move to New York City when they're done with college. Why is no one like weirded out by the fact that Rainbow Puppy can talk in real life New York City?
I don't know. Why aren't they weirded out by a lot of things that go on in this New York City world?
It's true. And like somehow the influence of Josh and Blue
yes!
like makes other things talk.
They spawn life from their hands.
It's very weird. I don't really get the implication. Although this probably isn't an implication. It's probably just little kids like it when stuff dances and has eyes and talk. So like whatever.
We put Google Eyes on the trash can and then Google Eyes
mailbox,
on the milk.
And the mustard. Also, okay, there's a running thread that Josh is like talking to like salt and pepper yeah. and mustard and stuff, and none of it's actually alive.
Yeah.
And then whenever he sees them get used as actual like condiments, he's like weirded out and freaked out by it because he thinks that they're alive, I guess. But then Steve uses the mustard that's alive.
Yeah.
Steve sees the mustard is alive and is like, oh, hey. And then he puts it on his thing anyways.
Let me take your insides, little creature, for my little pretzel here.
Maybe Josh is like a vegan or something.
Okay. Because I was about to say, why would Steve and Joe go into this horror universe where all their inanimate object friends can't talk or help? Steve and Joe, their existence is very ornamental. Mr. Salt does more to help the proceedings than Joe. Fuck, Bill S. Preston does more than...
Yeah, I mean, the fact that they're there is clearly a fan service fun thing, though.
The Broadway theater cameos.
Oh, right. We didn't even mention that. We really should.
We are a Broadway podcast at the end of the day.
That's what we are.
So Allie Stroker from Oklahoma, she has a scene where she sings the Planet song. And that was probably like the only like nostalgia tingle in the back of my brain where I'm like, I know this song.
The sun's a hot star. Mercury's hot too. Venus is the brightest planet. Earth is home to me and you. Mars is the red one. Jupiter's most wide. Saturn's got those icy rings. And Uranus spins on its side. Neptune's really windy. And Pluto's really small. You wanted to name the planets, and now we've named them all.
And then she says, hey, be confident. Sing your song. Josh, is there a dog in here somewhere that the show's named after? I don't know. So that makes sense. She has like a little stop. It feels very, it felt natural. Then Philippa yeah. Sue from Hamilton and Amelie and Into the Woods auditions for Rainbow Puppy. And
yeah.
And also the one who's the director of the show is Broadway star Beatty Wong. You might also know as the hot guy from Mulan, but not his singing voice.
Were those other people that auditioned, were any of those cameos, or
no,
were those just...
those are just okay. individuals. It's just Philippa Sue, BD Wong, Allie Stroker, and then the wild one. At least they all are Broadway singers. And then comes Stephen Pasquale as a janitor, and probably just showed up because he's married to Philippa Sue, and they're like, hey, you want to play a janitor? But it's just weird that every other Broadway star has a moment in their teaching and he's just like, I'm a janitor.
He's kind of like a dick too. He's like, yeah, you're too late. Yeah, you're too late for the audition. Sorry.
And what I hear in real life, he's not that nice either, but I'm not a gossipy bitch.
Yeah.
Wild facts, rawr! So, Blue's Clues was the first shows to use software like Media 100, Photoshop, and After Effects to do their animation, and were able to produce the episodes four times faster than traditional methods. As a result, surprising even Adobe themselves. So, this is one of the first pieces of media to use things that I literally use four times a day. I use Photoshop, and I use After Effects, and you can tell in that original, and that's part of what makes that look of that original show so charming.
It's interesting, actually. So, they weren't using this stuff beforehand? Like, Blue's Clues really revolutionized this in a way?
Yeah, because a lot of things were hand-drawn back then. Like cell animation.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, Blue's Clues, actual revolutionary.
New media revolution. I think that's just very, very incredible. And it makes me sad at how kind of generic looking everything looks in this movie, which is probably like my biggest fault in it, is just how cookie cutter kind of visually feels.
I think children's animation has gotten very cookie cutter. I mean, if you look at kids' animation, it's all the same kind of cheap 3D style. I'm talking about television, yeah. Especially, not movies necessarily.
I don't know. I think when you get to like mid-teenage, like I really like The Owl House. I like Infinity Train.
I mean children, like small children,
I
like
guess
toddler
the only
shows.
Decent like animated show like that is Bluey, which I haven't really dove into, but I hear is very good and looks nice. Like, I see even people our age or older doing video essays on them, and parents watch it without their kids, and that's like preschool shows. But I don't know, it all has that digital shine to it. Like, nothing looks like PB&J Otter, which is a show that no one remembers, but I remember it being at least feeling like a show, feeling like animation. And this just feels like zeros and ones. All right, next wild fact. Steve Burns, the original host of Blue's Clues, was listed as one of America's 100 most eligible bachelors in the year 2000.
He actually has some fun stories about that.
All right.
I don't know if you've ever heard any of his stories on that.
I don't.
He was extremely popular with the ladies, apparently, because he was the Blue's Clues guy, and their kids loved it. I can't recall all of his stories, but I would recommend looking up Steve Burns talking about the dates that Blue's Clues got him.
Oh, God, no, that would be great. I mean, it makes sense. I think that's kind of what John Stamos dealt with during his Full House years, too, where he was seen as this very family-friendly, kind guy, and that wasn't who he was in real life. All right, next one. When the show was originally conceived, Blue was created as a cat, and the show is to be called Blue's Prince. Ultimately, Blue was changed to a dog because Nickelodeon was already producing a show about a cat, but if you noticed, what is this? Steve's detective agency was called Blueprints.
Oh yeah. So that's a reference to
yes.
Okay.
The original title.
This in particular feels like a love letter to all of Blue's Clues, so yeah. It's not surprising that they would include something like that.
So, the voice of Blue to this day is the co-creator Tracy Page Johnson, and she started doing them during table reads under the assumption they would get a more professional voice actor down the line. However, everyone liked Johnson's take on Blue enough that they kept her on as Blue, and sincerely, that is probably some of the most iconic, like, just grunty noises I've ever heard.
Everyone knows what Blue sounds like.
Yeah.
Although, I feel like anyone could do Blue's voice, but I guess... Okay, I guess everyone but Jess could do Blue's voice.
Then you do it. You do it.
It's got to have more falsetto. You're too low. You're too low.
The one time I can't get my voice... Is that how I did it?
Now you're doing the guy from Chowder.
Also, another wild fact. In every episode of Blue's Clues, there are pink snails hidden at least three. And they're also in this movie. I noticed them and kept an eye out to see if they keep that going.
Oh, one of them was playing saxophone, but they pointed that one out.
Yeah, they did. Like, they didn't try to hide him, but... Meh. So, you know who was offered the role of Steve before Steve took the role, and I'm sure his name would be something else? It was Justin Long. He was offered the chance to replace Steve Burns as the host of the series. However, Long turned down the offer as he just secured a proper agent at the time and was interested in other projects. Imagine...
turned it down because he didn't want to be in Blue's Clues.
He wanted to be the Mac guy.
I feel like it would be fun to be a children's show host, but I don't think you would get paid nearly the amount that like an actor that does that much work should be.
I agree. I think the only person that ever really transcended like the children's show host thing was Pee-wee Herman, Paul Rubens.
They should get paid more, honestly.
They should.
Like, it should be a more respected profession because like these guys got to carry the damn thing, the
Especially
whole thing on their backs.
Educational materials. I think that like Bill Nye also is another good one that kind of both work.
Bill Nye escaped because his stuff wasn't for toddlers, and I think that's a difference.
Yeah, if you have a successful like infant show, you're basically stuck in that
forever.
So, Donovan Patton, Joe, auditioned for the role in the show at the age of 24, doing a Christopher Walken impression. Even though he had never heard of the show, thinking it was about blues and pictured a blue jazz singing dog with a soul patch. So he thought the show was about the blues.
They gave him the role. The dude couldn't be bothered to research your show at all. Goes on and does a Christopher Walken impression, and you give him the role?
I think that's part of the reason why I like Joe so much. He has one foot removed from this world pretty consistently, where Steve like started it. It defined his entire career forever. And this new kid, Josh, he probably watched it when he was younger and it was part of his childhood and now he gets to step into it. Joe's just 1 foot out, like, I it was a job, you know? And I respect that.
It's interesting that he's in that position. I feel like Steve couldn't be in that position because he was the show.
Yes.
Like, Blue's Clues, like, there would be no Joe if there wasn't, if Steve didn't do what he did.
Yeah.
Because Steve made the show a major hit, like, but... Yeah, Joe is just, he's interesting. I wonder if people still resent Joe.
I think people have come around on Joe a little nowadays, especially now that we got all three.
It wasn't his fault.
No.
You know?
He was the Andrew Garfield. Like, he's no Tobey Maguire, but he's no Tom Holland. But somehow in this one, like, moment, he is like the favorite.
I think he did a good job in this.
I think he did better than Steve in this.
Yeah, but I don't think it's a coincidence that Steve gets introduced first.
It's time for previews. It's time for previews.
Let's move on to our absolutely favorite section, where it's called Previews, where we compare our opinions to those the crazy folks on Letterboxd.com. I'm going to read Andrew some out-of-context Letterboxd reviews, and he has to tell me just based on the reviews alone whether... they are 1 star or 5 star. Are you ready? And don't forget to play previews theme.
You know I'm always ready for the ridiculous shit that you throw here.
All right, are you ready?
Oh, yeah.
An average day in New York.
So actually, I agree with this review just really quickly.
Okay.
There's one scene where Josh is getting like severe anxiety because he's in Times Square. And I feel that. Like, big time, I feel that. And I'm going to go with 5 stars because of that.
That's a 1 star, so you're wrong. But that is true. I don't think I've ever seen a grown man's penis before, but when you and I walked down Times Square, like, a man just decided to take it out and start pissing, and you and I saw a penis together, Andrew. New York is a wonderful place.
New York is a shithole that I never want to go to. I mean, I love it because Broadway is there. It's so fun.
Yeah, come see it at Broadway Con this year. All right, next one. Half this plot is just American Psycho.
What?
I didn't write it.
What the fuck? Which half?
That's a good question.
Have you seen American Psycho?
It's just a white guy walking down the street, which, not wrong.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So I guess the part with Steve is, we're going to go with 5 stars, though, because, I mean, American Psycho is a good movie, right?
That is correct. All right, next one. Ba-bow, ba-bow, ba-bow.
What does Blue think of his of her own fucking movie? I think she'd give it 5.
That was a 1 star.
I misread the text.
They were angry that Rainbow Puppy got more lines.
Oh, you know, I'd be pissed too. Rainbow Puppy is like a nobody, straight up.
All right. Josh made it to his Broadway audition, no thanks to Steve and Joe.
They sort of helped.
What did they do?
Okay, here's what they did. At the end, they encouraged him to actually do the performance anyways. He wouldn't have done that otherwise, and that got him the role. So, I mean, I feel like even if they didn't help him get there, they helped him achieve his dreams, which is more important. Let's be real. But we'll give this one a 1 star because they seem upset.
That was a 5 star.
God damn it.
All right, let's move on. I think this is our last one.
Okay.
I watched all of this on one of those TikTok live streams.
5 stars. Easy 5 stars.
That is correct. All right, Andrew, you did great at this Letterboxd game. And now that that's happened, how about we go into a mid-show and then talk about some of these songs?
Sure.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUPS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUPS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUPSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Hey guys, sorry to interrupt you in the middle of the show, but we've got a chill at you. Today's show is brought to you by the extremely kind donations by our donors over at Patreon. Andrew, what's going on over there at Patreon?
We got all sorts of new stuff going on at Patreon. We haven't really figured it all out yet, but we're going to, and there's going to be a lot of new stuff.
Oh, yeah. You're probably going to want to check out that $20 level, because pretty cool shit's about to go down there. Well, technically, if you wanted to pick an episode like this, like Hex Dawn did, you just got to get to that level and then ask, and then we'll cover whatever show you want. Just try to make it so that people want to hear it. As well, you get our episodes a day early or even earlier. You get video episodes where Andrew is probably like in our real episodes, there's about 30 minutes cut out, and there you get the full unedited raw version of our show. So you get to decide which you listen to. On that note, we also have podcasts that are only going on Patreon, and we're going to be doing some really cool, more mainstream stuff me and Andrew are going to take a look at. Liz and I are also going to do some things, but we're going to change up our format a bit so that me and Andrew have more room to play. So we got a lot of fun things going on over there, as well as our monthly Patreon meetups where you get to hang out with me and Andrew. So, go check that out. But who's currently supporting us on Patreon, Andrew?
Sure. Our current patrons are. We got a long list here, so let's go. We got Melissa Goldman, Danielle Renix, Jess the Stampede, Ewan Cassidy, Monica Thoreau, Mina Maniri, Brent Black, Nathaniel Stacey Coombe, Joseph Evans Green, Mary Lou Choquette, John Vanals, Russ Walker, Musical Hell, Kyle Summers, Janae C., Scootin' the Technicolor Dreamcoat, Allison Stuller, Nothing is Certain Except Beth and Taxes, Thespian, Ren Cullen, Raphael Martinez Salaz, Jessica T., Mitchell Young, Chai Teacup, Katie McDonough, Chris Marcote, Mimu, Kiji Marie Anastasio, Leela, RJ Nariga, Charlie B., Bjorn Hermans, Erica S., Toriana Frazier, Sammy the Most Lopez, Liana Morton, Haley Blazier, Cinemageddon Reviews, Villainous Myth, Sophina Ali, The Omega Geek, Paige Pearson, Maddie Wargel, Eliza Erdman, Anna Loskatova, Cheska Vare, Sarah Den Blaker, Jamila M. Brown, Evan Ball, Zachary Torres, Gathering Party Before Venturing Forth, pardon me, Rora Morassa, and Mara Forlowing.
That is correct. She did send in a correction because I messed it up so badly last week. So
it is Mara Forlowing. I was right.
Forlowing. You were right.
Ooh. I'm not very often correct on these things, so I gotta take the win.
That being said, it's mail time, mail time, mail time! Here's the mail, it never fails and makes me wanna wag my tail. If it comes, I wanna wail. We are also offering opportunities for patrons to write in questions and we answer on the air. And this week, we have Toriana Frazier asking us a very important patron question. Okay. Toriana says, I hope y'all are well. My question would be, if money did not matter, what would your dream job, Andrew?
Dream job. Jeez, that is a actually tough question because I don't...
You don't like working.
I don't love working, so my dream would honestly be not to work and just kind of do whatever I want. But I guess whatever I want would be probably a mix of like making music, singing songs, and fighting around the world.
You want to be Russell Crowe?
What about you, Jess?
Sincerely, this is actually, like, this is the first thing that came to my head. When I was young, my dream job was to host the Tonight Show. And
what?
I know.
That's crazy.
I know. Like, I wanted to be James Corden. And sometimes I romanticize the idea of, you know, like, hosting the Tonight Show and you being my Ed McMahon, like, sidekick host.
That'd be so good.
With Thanks as, like, you know, the lead-in band. And I just keep thinking about this. I'm like, man, that would be so fucking cool.
Someday, Musical with Cheese will be gigantic, and it'll be Tonight with Cheese.
Tonight with Cheese. I would watch the shit out of that show. I don't even need to host it. I'd just watch that. On that note, thank you very much, Toriana. If you want to write in a question for us to answer next week, come join us at any level on Patreon. All right, let's get back to the show. So these songs, right?
Yeah, There's songs. So it has like a certain style to it. It's like the Blues Clues, like little kid song style, but they kind of take inspiration from more Broadway style, like Broadway sounds, you know, in this.
It feels very Pasek and Paul.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that for sure. Where it's like poppy, but still Broadway.
It's very upbeat and pleasant. It feels well put together. Like, let's not say like it feels lazy. Nothing about this film feels lazy.
No, if you can say anything about this, it's that it feels like they put a lot of effort into it, like more effort than it probably deserves.
All the world is rising up to say good morning and wish us well on our way. Yet today's the day, anything's possible. Today's the day I get to find out if I get the chance to make my dreams come true.
What'd you think of the opening number, It's a Brand New Day, where we introduce Josh and like their way of life and all that stuff, and there's like spotlights and jazz hands and all that?
I think it's already like, going into it, I was expecting like bare minimum, you know. I was expecting like, this is Blue's Clues, but he's in a city and they sing a couple songs and that's it.
Yeah.
But like, you get to this and it's like, oh geez, they're doing like, they're trying to dance and like do like a musical, and it's like, wow, what? it's more than I was expecting.
I think they just got more than they bargained for with this kid Josh that plays Josh, our lead. Like, Steve, all credit to him, he's working on charm and charisma alone. I don't imagine he has much musical ability. I know he like became like a rap artist after post Blue's Clues, but I don't think he's got like the Broadway pedigree or anything like that. Or
I mean, his singing has always been the Blue's Clues stuff, where it's just like, oh, yeah, we just got a letter. And it's like, okay, but anybody can sing that, you know?
Yeah, which is both a good thing for like kids to be able to sing along, which not a bad thing, you know?
I think Blue's Clues has like blown up. And so as it's gotten bigger, they've been looking for like more talent. Because when they picked up Steve Burns, like, This was like a nobody kid, you know, like, and he coasted on charm. And like, I think that's why people do still like him. He's kind of the everyman and he's not like a big talented performer.
Yeah.
But
where Josh,
now they have that, though,
is a big talented performer. It does feel a little too performative at times, where
he's very smiley. He's very smiley.
Very perky Broadway star, the way like he feels like an overcompensating Broadway star, and that's not a negative thing. It's just how it is.
Yeah, but I think that gets put to good use, and he does a great job in this and sings all the songs really well. Yeah.
And especially when he's playing against nothing, he does very, very good. Like, and that's not a easy thing to do.
We're on our way. We're on our way.
I really like On Our Way, because that's the song where he gets like overstimulated and very uncomfortable, and then he just turns all the horrific noises of New York City into music.
That's the part that I'm like, I remember as being like, oh, I actually kind of relate to this. Like, I hate the city. The only thing they didn't include was like, you know, the rhythm of like somebody peeing in the corner and like
or
somebody trying
fake
to scam
Elsa
you.
Trying to punch you in the face.
Yeah, like somebody handing you a like fucking autograph thing. That's happened to me in the fucking city, trying to get me to buy a fucking CD. Jesus. Times Square, awful place.
Awful place. I love it, though. I sincerely, I love New York so much.
I think there's parts of New York that are okay, but I don't think any of those parts are on Manhattan.
that's fair. I mean, part of my joy of watching this was just seeing the Broadway posters in the background, seeing that Beetlejuice was still up and existing as a show, and that Beetlejuice exists in the Blue's Clues universe. Things like that were always like, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, On Our Way, fun number. It's a good time.
Yeah, I think like most of the songs in here, the problem is they kind of blur together. They don't tend to blend in very well.
There's a couple that stand out because they do sound different, like the rock and roll one that they play with Bill and Ted.
Yeah.
Which is like, okay, they did like an actual different style. They have like that kind of like saxophone like style when Steve shows up, but that's not really a song. It's just like background music.
And he keeps pointing it out that the the snails playing the saxophone music.
It's funny. I mean, it's kind of funny. Let's begin with a power break. Everybody's looking for blues, blues in you. Come on in, come on in. It's blues, blues in you. Step by step, yes. Clue by clue, let's think it through. It's blues, clues. It's blues, clues in you. What did you think of the rock song that they play in the taxi cab?
I think I'm not 100% sure of that. I think that's just the new theme song to Blue's Clues and You with the
you
rock
so?
Twang to it.
That
I'm like
makes sense.
98% sure of that.
That makes sense. I mean, I don't think they would write an entirely new song just to play in the taxi scene. It's kind of fun they're all singing along with it, though. All the Blue's Cluesers.
Yeah. Oh, God, they are Cluesers.
What do you call the Steve replacements and Steve?
Guys that... The new homeowner, basically.
But they're all related, technically.
Yeah, because Steve and Joe are brothers, and Josh is a cousin.
Yes.
Steve.
So they're all related. And, like, is that their house? Like, do they own that?
Is that, like, a generational house? Like, and if so, like, how do they pay to live in New York City? Like, I know Steve and Joe technically have jobs, but don't imagine they pay great.
I think private detective could pay well enough.
$47,000 a year, maybe.
But present store owner, and you have, they even mention you have to pay the rent in New York City for your present store.
New York is such a horrible place that even the movie for babies makes fun of what a horrible, horrible place it is.
Even the movie for small children is like, yeah, you couldn't actually afford to do this. And he's like,
Joe, you just sit around and smoke pot all day. What's wrong with you, man?
It's a present store. Maybe I'm magic. I think this is magic. Maybe I'm magical. Something incredible. Maybe I'm magic. I think this is magic. If what I'm feeling is true, the magic's in you. Maybe I'm magic. I think this is magic. Maybe I'm magical. What'd you think of Happiness is Magic, the big ending song, or like the song that he does for the audition?
I'm not going to lie. At this point, I was kind of zoning out. I kind of saw the writing on the wall. I knew where the movie was going.
Yeah, I think its song is fine.
If I was 4 years old and watching this, I would have pulled out the VHS and said, that was a good movie right before that song ended.
I think if I was 4 years old, I would just watch this VHS like 5 times a day. But like the Happiness is Magic song is fun because they get all the people to sing, like Steve and Joe join in. That's the only thing of note about it, really. It just sounds the same as the other songs, though.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind it. I like the energy of it.
I wish there was more to say about the music, but it really does kind of all feel the same.
Yeah, which, like, let's take a look at who actually did this music, because I'm pretty Anthony King, maybe.
I mean, I get why they would do it like this. I mean, this is music that is meant to be enjoyable to
children,
toddlers. And toddlers, I mean, we have heard what they listen to.
Have we?
You guys heard? Have you heard of Cocomelon?
Yes, I have heard of Cocomelon.
Jumping, jumping, yes, ha ha.
I mean, you got to keep them entertained.
I'd rather they listen to this than Cocomelon. That's for sure.
I would too, but the problem is, let's not compare this to Cocomelon or other contemporaries. But let's compare it to the previous version of Blue's Clues. I can hum a lot of songs from that original show because of how simple and easy and kind of quick they were.
They do those songs in this, though, because like Mail Time shows up.
Yeah, barely.
The audition people are all doing the
the ending song? Anything that you want to do.
Yeah, so like they're still doing it, like. All those songs are still here.
Yeah, but they didn't take that method into their proper numbers. Simplicity
the thing is, though,
is better.
Those songs that you're talking about aren't even songs. They're jingles.
No, they're not. They are.
They're basically jingles. So, like, I don't think you can really take that approach into writing a full musical.
Example, the Planet song. They literally have Ali Stroker singing that, and that was a full song from the original. And yeah, I remembered that and was able to be like, that is a melody in the synapses of my brain. You are triggering the nostalgia button because I knew this song. Maybe these songs will do that for a bunch of kids today. I don't know. I don't hang out with 4-year-olds very often.
You are talking about something that is like nostalgia for you, because you remember those songs because when you were 5, you probably played this VHS
tape
100 times. 100 times in a single day until your mother wanted to rip her hair out from listening to them, I'm sure.
100%. You are completely correct. So maybe it is just kind of me like, man, I'm no longer 3 years old, so this doesn't really hit tickle my brain anymore.
That's the Twitter thing, like
Star Wars is bad.
Shows for 3 year olds really have gone downhill in the 20 years since I was three.
It's the same argument, like when you first did our Rent episode and people were like, you had to be there, like it really meant something at the time, and you're like, I'm not gonna listen to that argument, the same argument that people make for Pokemon the first movie.
Yeah.
On that note, what is your overall thoughts on Blue's Big City Adventure and your cheese rating?
I can't recommend this, like, in good faith to anyone other than people with small children.
Yeah.
Like, if you have a small child, they will love this, I'm sure. They will just go absolutely berserk for it. And it's well made, and there's definitely a lot of effort in it, and you might get something out of it just because there's like, you can be like, oh, look, that's what Steve's up to, and oh, I know that, I know Joe. But like, for most of it, you're gonna be like, yeah, this is Blue's Clues, like, okay, yeah, he can't see the paw print, okay. But I mean, yeah, if you have small children, this is really good.
I do want to give plaudits for it sticking to what it is. And I know that sounds minimal, but I'm just thinking about an equivalent show of the same generation, of the same time, getting a live action movie. And that was Dora the Explorer and the Lost City of whatever the fuck.
I never watched it, but like, what the hell did they do with that?
I know there's one scene where Dora the Explorer has to explain to another girl to dig a poop hole so she can poop in it.
This is how you dig the latrine.
I don't understand why you would do that with Dora. Like, there's no real point to that.
But that is a similar show with a similar style where you scream at the screen, she turns around, and then you listen. It is a call and response kind of thing. And I guess they wanted to adjust for the older audience, where this one's like, no, we know what our bread and butter is. We're not going to pretend that we don't.
Yeah, I think that overall, this is good for small children. And if you are an adult and you want to watch this, you can. I don't think you're gonna get anything out of it. Cheese rating, I'm gonna give it Blue's Clues Kraft macaroni and cheese, which is something they made in 2001, and I remember having it. So
yeah, when did you have it?
2001, and they had little it has little like blue paw prints in it that you're supposed to find while you're eating the mac and cheese. I don't know what happens if you find them all. I assume you solve a mystery or something, but
I wonder if there was any big mysteries to solve in 2001. I guess we'll never know.
Nothing of note really happened that year. So.
Yeah. It was a pretty boring year, clearly. On that note, I liked this. I thought it was fine. I didn't find it difficult to engage. Like, I felt much more miserable watching a lot of other things for this show.
I don't think it was miserable.
No.
I thought it was fine. I'm never going to turn this on again. You know?
I enjoyed it. More than what we're covering next week, sincerely.
Okay.
I feel like this was very successful at what it was trying to do, and I think that deserves points. However, we probably should have said this at the beginning. If you are a child, this podcast probably isn't for you.
I'm at this point, they've already listened to it.
What happened in 2001?
Your parents will tell you someday.
Or the news. And I am giving this the only cheese I could give it, and that is blue cheese.
That is a good choice.
I don't use it very often, but I feel like it was apt for this.
It's literally Blue's Clues. You have to give it blue cheese. One of us had to give it blue cheese.
You already gave me the dibs that you were picking. So, wow, we made it. Our first episode without Brie. And the first episode that Andrew edited. I hope that none of the luster is left. I hope that it's still just as shiny a piece of cheese as it ever was. Also, how do you like our new branding? Isn't that pretty? Aren't we beautiful? Look it up. We're a whole new show now.
Yeah, our new branding looks pretty good. I didn't make it, though. Somebody else did.
You know who else didn't make it, Andrew?
I mean, these people made it more than I did, let's be real.
Our wonderful patrons, thank you guys for listening. Please follow us on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, at Musicals with Cheese. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. We'll read it right here on the podcast. You know, we'll talk about it. We'll chat about it. We'll say your name. Isn't that all you want? Follow us on Twitter, at Cheesy Musicals. We're on Patreon at Musicals with Cheese, Instagram Musicals with Cheese, YouTube page Musicals with Cheese. We have a full-on patron-only podcast over there where me and Andrew are going to be talking about a lot of things. It'll be fun. Email us at musicaltheaterlives@gmail.com. Our keeper of the cheese is Juliet Antonio.
Thank you so much.
This show is edited by Andrew DeWolf. Our theme songs were created by Robin Nash of IOU Music UK. Thank you to the Broadway Podcast Network for having us on the platform and for not kicking us off for talking so poorly about our Lord and Savior, Joe. All right. Is there anything else we have to say before we wrap this on up? Now it's time for So Long, but we'll sing just one more song. Thanks for doing your part. You sure are smart. We can do anything that you wanna do.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.